So anyhow, getting back to IDH mutations in general, can you talk about what agents are available for IDH1 and 2 and the approval situation and how you're utilizing them in your practice?
Right. So I haven't yet started this. All of this, it's an amazing summer for leukemia in terms of drug approval. We've waited 17 years in AML for a drug, and all of a sudden, three drugs get approved in the summer. And gemtuzumab has been reapproved, so four drugs. So the enasidenib, there's an IDH1 and an IDH2 inhibitor. The IDH1 is a little earlier in its development, but it's very similar in terms of its mechanism of action and in terms of its side effects. I forgot to mention an important side effect of enasidenib, the IDH2 inhibitor, which is actually something that we see in acute promyelocytic leukemia, which is a differentiation syndrome.
Right, right.
And that can be quite profound and quite difficult to manage. And the drug has to be held and steroids need to be given. And it's managed much the same as far as I know, and I don't personally have a lot of experience with it yet, as the retinoids and arsenic in acute promyelocytic leukemia.
So enasidenib, as you said, has been approved. I see ivosidenib as an IDH1 inhibitor. I don't know if there are other ones. Are these TKIs?
No, they are not. It's so fascinating. These are actually agents that go back to basic biochemistry and metabolism. And
right, the Krebs cycle.
Exactly, the Krebs cycle. So right. Isocitrate dehydrogenase. So with these mutations, the normal Krebs cycle, the normal metabolism is deregulated, and there's an accumulation of alpha-ketoglutarate in these patients with IDH1 and IDH2 mutations, and that causes epigenetic deregulation and impairment differentiation block. So these drugs are actually quite specific. They actually inhibit the enzyme. And by inhibiting the mutant enzyme, you get restoration of hopefully normal epigenetic regulation and differentiation. And that's why you see this differentiation syndrome.
So this lady that you treated with the IDH2 inhibitor and azacitidine, was that on your mind? Were
yes.
you looking for it?
And yes, we were. And we were wondering about it at one point. But often with these patients, I think similar to what we see in acute promyelocytic leukemia, and from what I've read, is that there's a very, very rapid leukocytosis that occurs with fever, and you can get pulmonary infiltrates, all of the same things. It's a differentiation syndrome. And we were looking for it. We were considering it. She never had the leukocytosis, but she did have fevers. She did have some mental status changes, but we had explanations for many of these things other than she had a CNS bleed, and she was very, very debilitated. And the reason she had the CNS bleed is that she had refractory thrombocytopenia. We could not find good platelet product for her, even with HLA-matched platelets. But the other interesting thing, and this is, we were given approval for this adjunct. We added a megakaryocyte stimulating factor for this particular patient, and we were allowed to give that drug, which is approved for ITP, to this particular patient.
And was it helpful?
Yes, I think it was. And we haven't stopped it yet. You know, I don't know what helped. The point that we were so worried about was that we were worried she would bleed to death and have another CNS bleed. And the issue was that her platelet count was often in the 1 to 2,000 range, impossibly low, even with HLA matched platelets. And so we were hoping that even with her dysfunctional, she still had a lot of megakaryocytes in her marrow, even with those dysfunctional megakaryocytes, we might get some promotion of maturation.
So I'm getting the feeling that making rounds with you must be very thrilling.
Very thrilling. Very thrilling. Very exhausting.
Wow. I'm exhausted just listening to it.
I know. I'm exhausted thinking about it because I start on service on Monday, actually.
So. All right. Well, now that you have this agent approved, how are you going to use it?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's approved right now for relapsed IDH2 mutation as a single agent. And I think there's worry about combinations. That needs to be tested in trials. People shouldn't, I don't think, be using these things sort of ad hoc, because I think there are problems with cytopenias. And I think that needs to be figured out, what combinations are effective and how they should be given, what schedules they should be given in. So I think it will be very, very useful for patients with IDH2 mutations. And it's being tested now, as I mentioned, in the frontline, both in combination for patients with IDH2 mutation and as a single agent in frontline therapy for older adults with AML.
I'm going to get into this with FLT3, but as long as we're talking about IDH mutations, is that something that is there from the beginning and stays and doesn't evolve, or can you see changes either way?
Yeah, that's one of the big questions. I think many people believe that IDH mutations are an early mutation, sort of one of the quote-unquote founder mutations. So whether they stay present or not, I definitely think that they are often still present, even at the time of relapse and progression of disease. I've seen that. That was that one challenging case of AML that I mentioned to you, who had an initial response to an IDH2 inhibitor and then progressed and had a new mutation. So I think it's an early mutation, and perhaps targeting it early in the course of the disease will be very useful. I'm not so sure later when other clones emerge that have additional mutations.
Anything that's known in terms of mechanisms of resistance to these agents?
Yeah, well, I think that not that much is known yet, but it definitely happens. And I suspect it's because there are other subclones present that evolve with additional mutations that then drive the leukemia. And that's what I've seen in this one patient of mine who now has a clone that has a FLT3 ITD mutation.
Wow. Yeah, I want to ask you about that.